everyone. Welcome to Meet the Rockadopolis. I'm Yislike Rockadopolis.
And I'm Lance Rockadopolis.
And in today's episode, we will be discussing age gap relationships. And specifically, we'll be talking about older women and younger men, up to a 20-year age difference. And we'll also be discussing the benefits and challenges of age gap relationships. So why am I exploring the possibility of seeking a younger man? Well, first of all, it's not for the sex. PIV sex can be fun. I just had some this morning. Lance is not a young man, particularly, sorry, Lance, but he is very fit and has no trouble getting hard. I mean, you've never had any trouble with that.
Well, that's not entirely true. When I was married to my ex-wife, I did have problems with erections. I believe the problem was stemming from the fact that I was in a vanilla relationship and not at all in a female-led one. But now I have absolutely no problems with erections. So when they say 15% of men my age have erectile dysfunction, I'm of the opinion that there are many men missing out on some form of power dynamic or something other than that. I mean, we are all specific individuals, so I'm not sure exactly what the cause might be. But there could be some kind of cause at the root of that dysfunction. So definitely I'm not vanilla.
So I already have a partner in Lance who is pretty much ready whenever I want it. And he's actually older than I am. My motivation for getting more slave husbands is basically greed.
I find that very sexy, and I want to encourage that in you. A greedy dom is a sexy dom to me.
I mean, old school Mormon men get to have polygyny. Why shouldn't I get to have polyandry?
Yes, we've been both putting in quite the effort. You more so than me. You've got to deal with the flakes, the liars, and just wading through all the kinksters that really don't want a full femdom relationship.
Yeah, and it can be emotionally draining to have to go through that over and over, but I've decided that it's worth it.
So now we're going to talk about some general statistics about age differences in marriages and relationships. Wikipedia has a page that shows data among heterosexual married couples. The entry "Age Disparity in Sexual Relationships" has data from the U.S. Census Bureau. I was surprised to see that there are about 34% of married couples within 1 to 2 years of each other. And I'm wondering if this large percentage indicates that couples are still marrying their high school sweethearts. 51% of marriages have the husband older than the wife, and only in 15% of marriages is the wife older. With larger age gap marriages, that is greater than 10 years, in 7.6% of married couples, the husband is older than the wife. Contrast that with 1.7% the wife older than the husband. And in Australia and in the UK, as well as Canada, the numbers show similar skews.
So I was looking at some data from Ipsos, which is a marketing and polling organization. Quote, among Americans, about 39% have previously dated someone with an age gap of 10 or more years. Of those polled, 25% of men have dated younger females, 14% of women have dated younger men, and 57% of those polled say they would be open to dating someone with a 10-plus year age difference. Of those polled, more people believe that the 10-plus year age gap for dating a younger person is okay for men, while fewer believe it's okay for females to do the same. 71% of people believe that it's okay for men to be in age gap relationships, and 60% believe it's okay for women.
People are asked about what an acceptable age difference is. in their own personal relationships, it seems that beyond 10 years appears to be regarded as non-normal to most people surveyed. Of course, this would differ from person to person, but we are talking about statistics here. What all this suggests is that age difference relationships are fairly common, with men tending to be the older partner.
Yeah, so people do seem to have a lot of opinions about age gap relationships. And according to market research, people are more okay with older man, younger woman relationships than the other way around. However, 33% of Americans felt that age gap relationships were less likely to succeed in the long run, and 39% indicated specifically that they thought that age gaps of 10 years or more were likely to fail. And of course, people's opinions can unfortunately have deleterious effects on a relationship, or just even on a potential relationship. And of course, there are all the submissive men who label themselves as switches, but only post pictures and writings about themselves in intensely subby scenarios. And presumably, they're doing this because they're worried about being seen as not masculine enough or whatever.
Yeah, I did this. I was calling myself a switch when we met. But I got over that shame after I got together with you.
Because I wanted a sub.
Right.
You know, I really wanted one, and I still want three more. But also, ageism is huge on FetLife, which, according to me, is 93% echo chamber. And yes, I just made that statistic up. But I do see a lot of ageist writings and comments coming up in my feed.
How so? How does that show itself to you?
Well, mostly it's a lot of talk about older men being predatory. And of course, older could be like 32 to a 19-year-old or 80 to a 50-year-old. It's just a bunch of ageism. And there's also a lot of contempt for older people's politics, a lot of assumptions, as though older people are inherently misogynistic and or anti-trans. There was a huge amount of antipathy between the boomers and the so-called greatest generation when the boomers were young. I remember a lot of strife between my dad and my grandfather regarding politics.
Yeah, and that reminds me of All in the Family with Archie Bunker and his son-in-law, Michael, I think his name was, Meathead.
Yeah.
He named him.
Sometimes I feel that generational antipathy can just be an endless cycle of negativity. But that's not necessarily true of everyone. And I really think social media itself is largely what's generating the antipathy today. Several studies have shown that the more people argue on social media, the more attention they get and the more dopamine they get. And social media wants that. But on a positive note, my experiences a lot of the time are that kinksters tend to be a lot friendlier in person, irrespective of their age or generation. The last munch that we went to, we talked to a couple of very friendly, you know, modest seeming regular old people who happen to be clearly well under the age of 30. And maybe people behave better in real life because there's more immediate accountability in person, potentially.
I was wondering whether COVID and working from home and doing all these meetings online, whether that contributed to the incivility. It just seems like a lot of social conditioning is done in person as opposed to just online.
And online has been around long before COVID too. Mm-hmm. And I think that the antipathy was around before the internet. I mean, my parents and their parents, they were from two completely different worlds. But anyway, it seems like a lot of people these days are being more pro-social, especially, you know, in real life. People want to connect with each other, and maybe that's a post-COVID thing going on. So now we're going to shift to talking about life stage differences. So I do have some qualms about opening up my search to significantly younger men. And one of those concerns is differences in life stages. And particularly, I'm concerned about how age gap relationships could influence or actually interfere with the basic personal development of a younger partner, especially when such a high level of power exchange is in play. So there are a lot of different ideas about life stages. For this episode, I settled on the schema created by the 20th century American psychoanalyst, Erik Erikson, whose work is still popular in developmental psychology and education studies. So depending on where you get your information, there are either 7 or 8 stages of life within Erikson's framework. So we'll just work with 8. There's infancy, toddlerhood, preschool years.
There's also middle childhood. And of course, there's the teens, young adulthood, middle adulthood, and older adulthood.
And so Erikson associates these age ranges with different developmental tasks, tasks that you have to complete in order to develop a strong sense of self. And these tasks are binary and high stakes, and their purpose is to develop a specific stage-related trait or virtue by struggling with stage-related conflicts. For example, the toddler's developmental tasks are to explore the world around them and gain confidence in themselves. What's at stake for toddlers is the question of autonomy and capability versus reliance on others. With one classic example, wearing diapers versus being able to control one's elimination function. If the task is not complete, then the issue will dog you until it is complete, and you might have some trouble with developing a sense of self. Or, in this case, you could always go on FetLife and find someone who would be more than happy to wipe your butt for you.
So that was sort of a kinky joke.
Indeed. So according to Erikson's theory, millennials are presently considered to be young adults, which is age 18 to 40, in my main source for this discussion. The Eriksonian binary for young adults pertains to intimacy versus isolation, involving the basic question, will I be alone or will I be loved? And that question pertains to all kinds of relationships, romantic, familial, social, professional even. Lance and I are both considered to be in middle adulthood. And so our Eriksonian task pertains to generativity versus stagnation. And the question for us is, how can I contribute to the world? And I feel like I'm right there. I'm right where I should be according to that stage in Erikson's framework. I know what I want my contributions to be, and I know how to make those contributions.
I guess my support in your efforts and goals is my contribution, and my service to you makes me happy. Also, I'd like to help the world become more accepting of submissive men and not have this constant shaming of them going on. Normalizing the acceptance of submissive men and helping submissive men accept themselves. But I am conflicted about that, because while I do want to help, I don't like the competition.
Yeah, and that's not very helpful to me, is it? The more submissive men there are who fully embrace their submissiveness, the more options I have.
True, but you don't like the thought of other femdoms being in competition with you.
Right. I certainly wouldn't want any more competition at all.
I must subordinate my own, I guess, insecurities.
Yes. And I don't have to. But in some ways, I do think that I'm really just coming into the middle adulthood phase about halfway through it when it comes to intimacy versus isolation. I met my future ex-husband when I was 23. And we've technically been together since then. On the surface, it looked like I did all the things. We got married. I had a child. I started a respectable career. But in terms of the Eriksonian model, it was a partial failure for me with regard to intimacy. For example, I had sex with my husband very rarely. I did manage to get pregnant, and we have an absolutely fantastic child, but I couldn't say that there was much intimacy in our relationship. His idea of intimacy was watching TV together in separate lounge chairs. That is what he specifically said to me when I asked him if we could work on intimacy.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's discouraging.
It was. But everything changed in my 40s. Perimenopause was a significant factor, and embracing BDSM was also a major piece of it. Yes, my future ex-husband is emotionally fucked up, but I was also sexually repressed because I believed that my kinkiness was evil. And so it wasn't until my early 40s that I was able to embrace my true, authentic, and romantic needs. And that was the first time I experienced true intimacy with any partner. So in terms of isolation versus intimacy, I'm not too far past where the millennials are with regard to Erikson's theory. But I think I have addressed the question of, will I be loved? I'm not worried about being loved. Of course, I continue to want love and be loved in return, but I'm not laser focused on it like I was in my 40s, which we talked about in episode 2 a few weeks ago. Of course, listeners may be wondering why we're devoting an entire season to talking about finding me additional partners if I'm so over the whole relationship thing. Well, I still like men, submissive men, and I want more of them. I want partners to help me in my current life stage, which is generativity versus stagnation.
Yeah, you've got something to give to the world, a gift. So it's very generative versus you don't want to be stagnant.
Exactly. And I want energetic, warm-hearted, deeply obedient, nummy, slave husbands to help me with my life's work, which includes this podcast. I want a family business, kind of like the Partridge Family meets the Sopranos.
You were talking about not being evil.
The Partridge Family aren't evil.
I would consider them.
You would consider them evil, maybe. So these guys don't have to be millennials by any means. It's just that millennials are the largest generation to date, and they do seem to be creative, funny, self-effacing at this point, and now they are capable of serious self-reflection, especially given all the shit they've had to take from older people. I mean, it can be a challenge to self-reflect when you're being barraged with insults and criticism. Sorry, guys. But thankfully, the millennial hate seems to have died down within the last couple of years. Now they just kind of seem and act like normal people.
Yeah, these last couple of minutes have seemed to me like it's a mea culpa.
It is. It is. I admit it. Of course, older people tend to face more significant challenges than just having to put up with the whippersnappers. Health is a big one. Obviously, the older you get, the more likely it is that you will have to contend with significant health issues. And there are also issues around libido and sexual functioning. I have a hard-on for beating Lance, but not necessarily for PIV sex. So what am I going to do with 35-year-old dick? Well, there's always CBT, and there definitely will be CBT. There was this morning.
So line up, boys.
Welcome. And there's also forced buy. But if the man is someone I love and respect, I suppose I can toss some pussy at him every once in a while. My pussy, of course. I keep a strict one pussy policy. Thankfully, Lance has no trouble getting hard. There could also be issues pertaining to intellectual sophistication and knowledge base. Sorry, not sorry. I want partners who are liberally educated or who are in the process of becoming liberally educated or are liberally educating themselves. Commitment to lifelong learning in general is also important to me. But there's also the unique knowledge base of the present that younger adults have and older adults may not have or even want to have. But I want to access their knowledge. Professionally, I need to keep track of how knowledge and aesthetics are evolving. I need to keep my finger on that pulse.
So what about attitudes, you know, worldviews and their values? Wouldn't those issues be potential sources of conflict? A younger man may be hyper-focused on building his career, and that may be a direct conflict with your goals. I guess that can all be handled on a case-by-case basis, you know, part of the vetting process.
Yes, and someone who is committed to staying in a challenging career and putting that career first would not be a good fit and would be weeded out of the selection process early on. So this concludes part one of our two-part discussion of age gap relationships. Our next episode is part two of this discussion, and in that episode, we'll focus on generational differences and power dynamics in age gap relationships. So thank you very much for joining us today, and have a great week.